Gobinda.
Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So, for some weeks before, for some months, we were thinking about discussing about Bhaktivedanta Maharaj. We never did it. We do it in a different way. We're going to come across these quotes of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. If you look in Rupa Vilas Prabhu's book, A Ray of Vishnu, then actually lists all these different quotes, about 30 quotes of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. And actually every quote is powerful, very powerful. Lots to think about. So we'll just go each quote one by one, try to pick out some points and see if there's any discussion on any of these quotes of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. Yeah, so we'll just go one by one and see how we get. Okay, so quote number one. These quotes were either taken from Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's, mainly they were taken from his lectures that he gave to his disciples. Okay, so this is his first quote. If I could perfectly deliver even one soul back home, back to Godhead, I would think my mission, propagating Krishna consciousness, to be successful. So if I could perfectly deliver even one soul back home, back to Godhead, I would think my mission, propagating Krishna consciousness, to be successful. This is a very interesting point Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is making. Of course, we know that the devotees in the spiritual world, they come to the material world to preach. We come because, okay, we had some desire to experience what life would be like. Of course, even that can turn into a debate, but we won't go into that. But the Nitya Siddha devotees are coming. We know that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is Nayana Manjari in the spiritual world. Something I was thinking about in the last few months, and maybe I also ask you what you think about it. In the spiritual world, everyone is a pure devotee. So one sign of a pure devotee, or one essential characteristic of a pure devotee, is that they have compassion. Vaishnava is paradukha dukhi, feels another's suffering to be like his own. So why is it that if everyone in the spiritual world is a pure devotee, how is it that only a few of them are coming to this world to preach? Why is it that more don't want to come? Of course, Bhavananda Prabhu says this pastime even where I don't know how some take it as secondary evidence or not. But anyway, the pastime is that he said Prabhupada related to him that Srila Prabhupada actually was in the spiritual world and Krishna told him to come to the material world to preach, and he was like, no, I don't want to come to preach. No, and then Krishna was like, no, don't worry. You just write the books and I'll do everything else. But the point comes that why is it that more devotees don't come from the spiritual world to preach, if the essence of a pure devotee in the spiritual world is to have compassion? You would think that more of them would come to this world, seeing the suffering condition of the fallen conditioned souls. So why do you think that is?
Maybe they do. There's millions of universes, right?
Mm-hmm. But if the spiritual world is 3/4 of the creation and the material world is only 1/4, then you would think there'd be like a few more Mahabhagavats around.
Oh, but then it defies the point of the material world, right? That we come into it is to enjoy. Mm-hmm. So all of them come in and everyone would have to go back to God. Like,
isn't that a good thing?
No, but everyone has, because some may not be ready, right? Because they have the desire to enjoy without Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to actually purify themselves, come to the point that they won't come back.
So then why does even one of them come? Then none of them should come.
but there are some who realize that they don't enjoy and don't go back. So then that's where you come.
Okay, so you're saying you only need a set number to give everyone the opportunity. Why is it? Why is it that more devotees don't? Why don't they have that natural? I'm in the spiritual world. I'm enjoying with Krishna. I'm here. Like as if we're in the temple and we're having, you know, nice kirtan and things. And you know, like we think like maybe I should go out and also preach. You know, and bring people instead of just relishing myself.
Is it? How do I don't know how it works, but is it that they choose to come down and Krishna tells them to go down? Is it the second? Because if it's the second one, it's Krishna's choice.
Yeah, so this is actually the point. That the pure devotees do have compassion. They naturally feel the suffering and pain of others. But for a pure devotee, the main consideration is what will make Krishna happy. What will please Krishna. So therefore, if they're in the spiritual world and Krishna tells them to go and preach in the material world, then because that's Krishna's desire, then they'll preach. And if Krishna doesn't say anything, and Krishna just is enjoying their association in the spiritual world, then they're more than happy to do that. So the main driver behind actually a devotee preaching, of course compassion is there, but actually the main reason is that it's Krishna's order. It's Krishna's instruction. That's why they preach. Another significant point is that even though a pure devotee may have compassion, until they get the order from either the spiritual master or Krishna to preach, they don't feel empowered to actually do anything in the world anyway. That's why we see even in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, Nityananda, Haridas, the Goswamis, they only began preaching after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered them to preach. So actually the main reason that a devotee is preaching is because of the order of Krishna. And the main reason that we're preaching is also because of the order of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada said, I'm begging you to spread this Krishna Consciousness Society, and therefore we're trying to do whatever we can. So the first significant point to understand that a pure devotee is preaching primarily because of the order of Krishna. And also compassion is there. But feeling that the compassion is only empowered by the order. So here Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj in this quote is saying, if I could even deliver one soul, then the mission would be a success. And basically the overriding point here is that we're detached from results when we preach. First thing is that we know that we're not in control of the results. We're only in control of the endeavor that we make. So we just try to make the best endeavor that we can. So the point is, when we're preaching, that we just try our best. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he would have many brahmacharis, and even if one brahmachari would go out and distribute a few magazines for a few paisa, then when he would come back to the math, then Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he was doing huge preaching. He was having like exhibitions the size of like 5 football pitches. And you know, in Calcutta, in like 1 month of exhibitions, he had nearly 1 million or 2 million people coming through the exhibition. I mean, huge numbers of people. He was doing big preaching. But even if a brahmachari would go out and distribute a few magazines, then he would take the time to actually speak to that devotee and appreciate them. Because only interested in the endeavor, that as long as you try your best, as long as you go out of your comfort zone to do something, then that's very wonderful, that's perfect. So in preaching, the main thing is that we just make an endeavor. One time they organized a program for Srila Prabhupada in the early 66 or something. And at that time the devotees didn't have any money, but they just decided to like hire out this big hall. You know, it cost a lot of money. They advertised it, so many leaflets, and no one came. So Prabhupada was there, devoted, like 5 devotees in the front row, you know, and Srila Prabhupada gave the lecture and everything, and the devotees were feeling really bad. And afterwards Prabhupada said, why are you feeling bad? Narad Muni was there, Brahma was there, all the demigods were there. What do you mean no one came? All these great personalities came because you made an endeavor. And you made the endeavor with sincerity and to the best of your ability. So it was a success. Result doesn't matter. So the point here is that we are not attached to the results. At the same time, we use the results to help us to measure whether we're making the best endeavor we can. So we are only in control of our endeavor, number one, physically and intellectually in preaching. Physically means we try to be as active as possible in our preaching, and intellectually means we try to rack our brains to find out what's the best way to connect with people. But after we've done everything, then we understand that we're not in control of the result. And therefore, when one actually preaches sincerely and they do the best effort they can, and still the result doesn't come, then the devotee is satisfied. Then the devotee considers that it's a success. Because success is really is internal success. We're not in control of the result. So that's the first significant point here. Second significant point about results in preaching is that we don't actually know the results of our preaching. So actually it's very, very hard to measure what the results of your preaching are anyway. Often one point comes that we try to measure preaching in terms of quantity, but how do we know that quality, if we get only a small quantity but the quality is amazing, then that can create a huge effect in the future, but we may not perceive that. And probably one of the most striking examples is Srila Prabhupada going to Russia. Srila Prabhupada, when he went to Russia for the first time, he spent 1 week there. He didn't do any programs. Everywhere else in the world they were organizing huge pandal programs for him, distributing, you know, thousands, thousands of books. When he went to Russia, no programs. No meeting the celebrities or anyone like that, or high-ranking politicians. Externally, there seemed to be very little result. He could just about get something to eat. And the KGB were, keeping their eye out. But Prabhupada, he just met one person, I think the son of the ambassador or something like that. Just one person, that's it. That's all he did. And he gave him some Krishna consciousness, and even then it didn't seem like this boy was really that serious. But that was the whole entirety of his preaching in Russia. And then from there it grew. And then from there it's like now Russia is huge. And Russians are everywhere. It's like you go to Vrindavan, Mayapur, it's like even in Loi Bazaar all the shopkeepers know Russian. Because that's a huge major source of income. Right? So Russians are everywhere. So how is that? So we can't measure the result. Chanakya Pandit says, Ekas Chandras Tamohanti Nacha Satir Ganarabi, that thousands of stars, what will they do? But if you have one moon, that's enough to illuminate the whole sky. So you don't know. You don't know who's coming to your KC SOC or to your program. Maybe one person there will do something amazing. So you cannot measure it on results, external quantitative results, because we don't know. Another significant point in preaching is that we don't know the results because we're expecting everything to manifest within our lifetime. I did this, then it should lead to this, and I should see the result all in my little 10, 15, 20, 30 years of preaching. But if this is going to be the movement for the next 10,000 years, then maybe all of our preaching is simply to lay the foundations for the next generation of devotees who will do something amazing, and maybe they'll reap benefits that we don't know about. Maybe what we're doing through all our preaching is just planting many seeds, and then later on that will have an effect. But sometimes we think everything should happen within our lifetime, within our sight. And therefore when it's not happening, we think the preaching is not effective. But maybe we're just one link in a whole long chain. How do we know? So therefore, It's difficult. It's difficult to know results. It's difficult to know results because we sometimes think, another point is that, who came to the program? Who became a devotee from the program? But maybe one of the major results of preaching is just the people that you engage in doing the program. Maybe one of the major benefits or results of preaching is the self-purification that we get from doing the preaching. That's huge benefit. Like, I studied at UCL and we did KC Sokdea. I don't know how many devotees I preached to or how many people we made into devotees. But one thing I know for sure is that it definitely helped me. Right? So we don't know. The preaching or the preaching result is not just the externals. It's in who we engage. It's in the internal transformation that it creates within ourselves. So like this, we don't actually know what the result of the preaching is. That doesn't mean that we don't look at the result and try to improve, but it just means that we have to just be patient and see. Another thing with preaching is that it doesn't work linear. Like, we often give that analogy of the two trees, and then one is growing, and then another one is just very, very, doesn't seem to be growing, and then after like 5 years it just, boom, it goes. So similarly in our preaching, you may think like, nothing's happening, but if we just keep going, then maybe at a certain point it will just reach a critical mass, and then it will just like explode. And that's that. It could be like that. For example, Srila Prabhupada is another example of that. He tried so much in India. So much, you know, this way, that way, Jhansi, you know, went to Delhi, you know, so many things he was trying. And nothing, it was just failure after failure after failure after failure. But then finally when he came, then it just exploded beyond wildest imagination. So therefore here Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is saying, if I can make one person a devotee of Krishna, then my mission will be successful. And essentially what he's saying is that ultimately the result is not in our hands. If we just make an endeavor, that's the point. So that's always significant for us to remember, because we're trying to preach and we're trying to do the best we can. But sometimes we can feel like we're not making an impact on the world. You know? And some time ago we had that discussion about, why isn't the Krishna consciousness movement bigger? You know, if it is the most profound revelation of the absolute truth, how is it that there's few people who know about it? And then we went through different reasons why that may be. So we should always remember that results we don't know, there's something deeper going on.
Just at that point, Krishna says also that only few people will take up to this process in the Gita's. So it makes sense that not many people will take up to it. Right?
Yeah, out of many thousands, I mean, for perfection. Yeah. Any other questions or points on this? No? Another point why Krishna consciousness may not be expanding is because we're not ready to receive the people. Imagine, for example, tomorrow, if the manager just expanded and thousands of people began coming, then would we have the infrastructure in place to actually take care of the people? Do we have the maturity of devotees to actually manage everything? And if we don't have the maturity of leaders to manage everything and all the people that are coming, then actually what will end up happening is that all these people will actually, their spiritual life will get destroyed because we're not able to take care of them. So maybe Krishna is not purposely not sending the people because we're not ready to receive them. And only when the devotee is mature enough to take care of people, then Krishna will send. And that can stand for anything. That can stand, for example, for the brahmachari ashram. That some may say, why aren't more people becoming brahmacharis? But maybe we're not mature enough to receive those people and take care of them in their spiritual lives, and therefore Krishna doesn't send. Because if Krishna does send before we're ready, then what will happen is their spiritual life will get destroyed, our spiritual life will get destroyed because we've committed offences by not taking care of people, and the movement will get destroyed because so many bad experiences will be there which will taint the reputation. So whether it's the Brahmacharya Ashram, whether it's Pandavasena, whether it's Bhaktivedanta Manor, whether it's ISKCON as a whole, the point is until we're ready to take care and receive the people, Krishna won't send. And therefore Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Krishna can give you everything overnight, but you're not ready. You're not ready to handle it. You know, you're not ready to receive it. So therefore, this is also a significant point. Okay, next quote. So this is one of the final lectures that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj gave. He gave three final instructions to his disciples. So it wasn't like he said it in one go, but these were the three salient points that came out. The three final instructions. Number one, do not try to be a hero. Simply try to be a speck in the hands of the spiritual master. Two, always take shelter of Harinam and Harikatha. And three, beware of disunity. Interesting. The three final instructions of Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. One, do not try to be a hero. Number two, always take shelter of Harinam and Harikatha. Number three, beware of disunity. So these are all very, very important instructions. Number one, do not try to be a hero. Indradyumna Maharaj said something nice. Don't try to become a great devotee. Just try and be a good devotee. Which means that we just have to follow nicely. Instead of trying to make our mark, instead of trying to make a name for what we've achieved in this world, rather we just try to become part of the most amazing movement and just try to become part of a team, humbly serving others to try and achieve something amazing for Srila Prabhupada in this world. That's the essence. And when that focus is away from ourself, putting ourself in the spotlight or making a name for ourselves, then actually preaching can really expand. Isn't it? The famous quote is there, it's amazing what you can achieve when you don't care who gets the credit. Yeah. So half the time we're just disenthused or just not giving a full effort because we think like, I'm not going to get anything from this. And if a whole movement of devotees is thinking like that, like, oh, I don't want to do it because I'm not going to get it, nothing in it for me. If a whole movement of devotees is thinking like that, then the potency just drops. But if everyone is thinking, you know, I don't care who gets the credit, we just got to do something, you know, and work together, that level of selflessness empowers the whole movement and empowers you to actually achieve, you know, proper Krishna consciousness. So therefore in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Prabhupada is talking about Madhavendra Puri and when he found the Gopal deity. And when he found the Gopal deity, then he said that Gopal told him, rescue me and make a temple for me. And Madhavendra Puri, he just, like, he was a renunciate, he was incredibly, you know, incredibly pure in heart. And he just got all the villagers, and some of the villagers were building the temple, some of them were bringing all the items, some of them were cooking. And like, in a few days flat, he managed to just create the whole thing. Because of his purity of heart. And then in those purports, Prabhupada writes that just as Ram and the monkeys were able to build an 800-mile bridge in 5 days, Just as Arjun was able to annihilate 18 Okshahini divisions in 18 days, he says, similarly, we have been empowered to spread Krishna consciousness just in a few years all over the world. Why? Because Krishna's empowerment comes from cooperation and from the selflessness of the devotees. So here Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is saying, don't try and be a hero. We're not on an individual mission here. We're trying to do something together, co-jointly for Srila Prabhupada. And therefore we shouldn't endeavour for fame. And anyway, if you endeavour for fame, it doesn't come. In Sanskrit, the Sanskrit word for fame is stuti. And stuti also means an unmarried girl. So the acharyas give the commentary, they say, just like an unmarried girl. If someone wants to marry her, say she's not attractive. But if someone doesn't want to marry her, then she's really attractive. That's the nature of, you know, boy-girl condition, dynamics in this world. If someone wants, then no, I'm not interested. But if they don't want, well, why? You know why? You know, and then they endeavour to be with that person. So fame is the same. If you don't want it, then it will come. And if you really want it, it won't come. And again, the example is Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri is again the same example. He installed Gopal, then he had the dream from Gopal, and Gopal said, go to Jagannath Puri and get sandalwood paste. So then he went on the trek towards Jagannath Puri and he stopped at Ramuna. And then when he stopped at Ramuna, then he desired to taste the sweet rice. So then when the pujari saved the sweet rice and stole it for him, and then the deity saved it for him, and then the pujari had the dream, and then the pujari came to bring the sweet rice to him. Then the first thing he realized, he thought, oh my God, you know, like, Gopinath has stolen the sweet rice for me. Like, now when everyone finds out about this, they're going to think I'm an amazing devotee. Therefore, what's the first thing he did? He just left. So it's before everyone finds out, before all these people try to honor me, I'm going to get out of here. So then immediately that very night he left for Jagannath Puri. But then what happened when he got to Jagannath Puri? Everyone found out anyway. And he was just being mobbed in Jagannath Puri. But then in Jagannath Puri he stayed because he had service. So we don't look for honor, we actually run away from honor. But when honor comes to us, when fame comes to us, when respect comes to us, and we have some service to do, then what we do is we use all of that fame in order to complete the service. And that's why he stayed in Jagannath Puri. And then finally, after he had done all his service and got the sandalwood, then he left again. So therefore, Bhagavad, don't try and be a hero. One of his disciples, he was preaching all across India. And he was doing huge preaching. He was doing pandal programs and thousands of people were coming. So one day he came back to Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and he said, you know, then he started giving his report of all his preaching that he was doing. We did this pandal program, this many people came, this many books distributed. It was an impressive list. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj just looked at him and he was quiet. And he just looked at him and he said, you have not realized that you are mine. It was like, the body was a bit bewildered, you know, like, he said, what I'm doing all this is preaching for you, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, you have not realized you are mine. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj explained to him that there's two types of surrender, external surrender and internal surrender. External surrender means you follow orders of the spiritual master, you do what you're supposed to do, you follow all the principles, you do the external activities. But internal surrender means to actually surrender your ego. You can actually have external surrender and internally still be independent. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj therefore said to him, you have not realized you are mine. You're doing the externals, but internally you're still an independent agent. And therefore, to internally conclude that I only want to work for Krishna. that I have no personal mission now anymore in this world. That's pure Krishna consciousness. And that's what will help us to maintain and stay on the path. And therefore here Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj says, don't try and be a hero. Simply try to be a speck in the hands of the spiritual master. And he himself was always in that consciousness. When one time someone was glorifying him, saying, you're such a big preacher, you go around and you do so many things, but your spiritual master, he's just a bhajanandi. Gokishodas Babaji, like, how does that work? Like, you're doing so much. He doesn't preach to anyone. And they were in a boat crossing the Jalangi. So you know what those boats are like, those loud boats, you know, with the fans, you know. So he pointed to the guy and he said, I'm just like this fan. It's moving and making a lot of noise. But he said, look, and then they followed the wire. And then they went right to the back of the ship, or back of the boat. And there was a small battery there. And he said, I'm like this fan, but this is my spiritual master. He's inconspicuous. He's in the back. You don't see him so much. He doesn't seem like he's really that active. But all the power, all the potency, all the energy, all the shakti is all coming from there. I don't have anything. If you cut that wire, nothing. Similarly, he was saying that we may do so much preaching, but actually we should understand that we are only working on the blessings and empowerment of the superiors. And therefore he's saying, don't try and be a hero. Simply try to be a speck in the hands of the spiritual master. Yeah. And second point, he's saying, always take shelter of Harinama and Harikatha. So we know that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj did that. At the age of 31, I was thinking about this last year because I was 31. At the age of 31, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj went to, I can't remember where he went, somewhere, Chandrasekhar's house or somewhere in that area. He went into a bhajan kutir and he vowed to chant 192 rounds a day. And he calculated that if he chanted 192 rounds a day, which is 300,000 names every day, Haridas Thakur standard, if he did that for 9 years, then he would chant 1 billion names of Krishna. So he did it. From 31 till 40, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj was chanting 192 rounds a day in preparation for the preaching mission. And then after he completed that, then he began preaching. So,
he's in preparation, but he's not doing chanting for sadhana. So then why does he need to... Well, he's doing it to set a point that this is really important, or was he doing it for some other reason?
It's also the humility of a devotee that they're following that process not only to set an example, but because they actually feel they need to do that. So yeah, setting an example is there, but also they are feeling from their natural humility that, yeah, I also need this for my own purification. And therefore, like Srila Prabhupada would follow the example. And, you know, like, for example, when he was in the room with his sister, Pishima, and then one of the disciples left. Later on, Prabhupada chastised him. He said, what are you doing? Like, leave me alone with the woman. The devotee was like, oh, you, Prabhupada, I mean, it's your sister as well. You know, it's like, no, it's not. No, Prabhupada's not. No, none of us are above it. So then we could say, okay, Prabhupada was just doing that to set an example, but it's also true humility that he's thinking, I'm also susceptible. Therefore, you know, Prabhupada was praying, well, the devotee, Prabhupada said, I will never fall down. And then the next day they saw him praying to the deities. And they said, what were you praying for? I was praying that I would never fall down. But yesterday he said, you will never fall down. Prabhupada said, yes, I will never fall down because I'm always praying. So that's the humility. It's not just to set an example, but natural humility that one is thinking, I need to do this for my self-purification. So Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj did that for 9 years, from 31 to 40, just chanting every day. And therefore he's saying, always take shelter of Harinam. Still we're thinking chanting to be a very impractical activity. That's our disease. We're not seeing how the chanting is really going to solve anything. We're doing it because, okay, it's, you know, we know we should be doing it. But still it's very hard for us to make the link of how this is actually going to do anything in my life. But actually it's a very practical activity. Prabhupada had a godbrother, Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji. And he was very renowned because he was always chanting. And whenever anyone would come to him, he would just, and ask him any question, he would just like chuckle. Like, and then he would just say, like, just chant Hare Krishna. That was just like standing. Whenever someone came to him and asked a question, whether it was a philosophical question, whether it was advice for their life, whether it was a problem in the math, he would just chuckle and he would just say, just chant Hare Krishna. And then one time Rupa Vilaspur was telling me he had the fortune of meeting him. So one time he met him and somehow he asked a question and then he began to speak. Like, not just chant Hare Krishna, but he actually began to speak something, philosophy. And then he began speaking and he was so eloquent. He knew so many shastras. His English was amazing. And then Rupa Vilas said, my God, I realized this person isn't just some unintelligent simpleton. I mean, he knows so much. But even though he knows so much, he realized that the ultimate conclusion is just chant Hare Krishna. And therefore, whenever someone would come to him with a question, he'd just say, just laugh and say, just chant Hare Krishna. He could give it so many complex answers, intricate answers, but he realized that this is the only solution. Everything else is just like for the mind, you know. So we're not realizing how practical chanting is, but chanting is this. Jayadvaita Maharaj gives that example that our whole spiritual life is like a ship. And in a ship at the back you have just like this small piece of like metal and it moves and it's the rudder. And just on how this one little thing moves, the whole direction of the ship changes. So similarly, just like how we move our tongue and chant with real attention and absorption, that changes everything. And therefore here, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is saying, always take shelter of Harinam, and not only Harinam but Harikatha. He was always giving the example, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, that we never worship Krishna without Radharani, because Radharani is the Swarup Shakti of Krishna. So he just said, just like Radharani is the Swarup Shakti and we never worship Krishna without Radharani, Harikatha is the Swarup Shakti of Harikirtan. So we never do Hari Kirtan without also doing Hari Katha. And the reason he said that, because at that time in Mayapur, it was such a, like, it was a real Kirtan movement. And Vrindavan, where the other Gaudiya Vaishnavas was, that was like a real place of study, and because it was the Goswamis, and the Goswamis had written so many literature. So these two different places have the two different moods. Mayapur was all about Kirtan and Harinam, and Vrindavan was more about like austerity and study. So then Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj brought the two elements together and he said both are needed. Just as we don't worship Krishna without Radharani, we don't do Harinam without Harikatha, because they empower each other like that.
What do you mean by Swarup Shakti?
Swarup Shakti just means his own, like a pleasure potency, like that.
Okay.
So in other words, it's his own Shakti expanded like that. But basically, just like Radharani and Krishna have that relationship, we don't worship one with the other. Because we access Krishna through his Swarup Shakti. So we access Krishna through Radharani. So similarly, we access Harinam also when we have strong understanding of Shastra, then we can enter deeper into the holy name, like that. So here he's saying, number one, don't try and be a hero. Number two, always take shelter of Harinam and Harikatha. And number three, he's saying, beware of disunity. And disunity comes when these first two things are not there. Or disunity comes when, number one, everyone's trying to be a hero, and everyone's in it to find out how they can make a name for themselves. And then when each of them clash with each other, or one seems to be, their status seems to be expanding while another one is not, then they drag each other down like that. So disunity comes when everyone's trying to be a hero, and number two, when there isn't sufficient sadhana and chanting and hearing, because then we lose the plot, then we lose the reason why we're even doing this. So if you see the breakdown of a movement, it comes when these things are neglected. Number one, it becomes very much about people's individual missions, and number two, they begin to lose their focus on the essential reading and chanting. And therefore, if you look at the Gaudiya Math, that's how the Gaudiya Math broke down. Because everyone began to go on their own mission. And then the spirituality became neglected. And therefore, they all went in all different directions. And then the whole thing collapsed. Like that. So disunity comes when these things are not there. So we have to be careful. Sometimes in our movement we criticize each other more than even people outside criticize us. Everyone out there, actually, they quite like us, you know. Like, yeah, these guys are cool, they're like chilled out. You know? Inside we're just like Rottweilers with each other, you know. Ripping each other apart on the internet and all this kind of stuff, you know. So Prabhupada said the movement, it cannot be destroyed by anyone outside. It will only be destroyed from within. Destroy the work that we're doing from within. So therefore he was always stressing so much cooperation. Your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate and live together. So he said, so Bhaktisiddhanta said, beware of disunity. And where there is unity, we already gave that example, that where there is cooperation, then Krishna's empowerment comes. Because that's what pleases Krishna. When the Prachetas were doing austerities under the sea for many, many years, then they did like heavy austerity. And when they finally appeared, Krishna says, I'm so pleased. But why was he pleased? Not by their austerity. That was heavy austerity, but that wasn't what pleased Krishna. He said, I'm pleased by your good friendship. That's what was more pleasing to me than even austerity. Because actually in Kali Yuga, to have a group of people together who actually cooperate and connect is like rare. You know? So that's actually more pleasing to Krishna, the cooperation. And when Krishna is pleased in that cooperation, then all empowerment comes. So yeah. So here Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj says, the three final instructions. One, do not try to be a hero. Two, always take shelter of Harinam. Three, beware of disunity. Any questions on this point?
So, back to the point you made earlier about if ISKCON isn't expanding, it might be because we're not ready to cater to
receive the people.
Yeah. So, in Prabhupada's day, you know, so many people came, but they ended up leaving as well. There's like a lot of people that left. Is that to say that they weren't ready to cater for them as well, but they still came, you know? So.
Yeah, it's hard to say. We cannot put our finger on it and say this is the reason why people are not coming, because we're not ready. But one thing is for sure, when we do become more mature, when we become more genuinely concerned about people's welfare, then Krishna will provide more. At that time, maybe even though the devotees weren't in that space, naturally because of their own evolution in their own spiritual life, still people came. Maybe that was just because Krishna wanted that for the start of the movement and to establish Krishna consciousness. But we see in any project or place in the world, if we actually take care of people, then more people will come. It's like Lakshmi. If you take care of Lakshmi, then more Lakshmi will come. But if you use it, you know, whimsically, then you'll lose it. So therefore, the principle stands that when we become more qualified, then Krishna will send more also. Because our consciousness actually creates the reality.
So we say we don't follow, we follow in the footsteps of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarathakur. It took like 9 years to do just pure bhajan. So is that an example that, not to do that, but just on what initial years in Krishna consciousness, fully 100% bhajan and no preaching?
Yeah, so there's two things, right? Nectar of Devotion talks about Anukarini and Anusharini. Anu means to follow, Karini means activity, and Sharini means the essence. So Anukarini means to follow the activity, and Anusharini means to follow the essential principle of it. So the principle that we take from this is that nourishment is needed. Nourishment is needed not only in the start, but throughout one's spiritual life to continue on. And therefore, yeah, we take the principle. It may not be 9 years of 192 rounds, which is way beyond us. But it may be that, yeah, okay, you do some Bhakti Shastri or some training like that, where you get some good foundation, and then that empowers you to do more. You know, and we see that preaching is not just about running around and just doing many, many things. But preaching is about going deep. And the more deep you go, and the more filled you are in Krishna consciousness, then you naturally affect people in a deeper way. So one level of preaching is what effect we create by doing many things. But a higher level of preaching is what we do for the world by actually, one, being deep ourselves, and two, being able to deeply affect other people. And that's why Srila Prabhupada, he was just in a room, you know, when, you know, finally after he began, he was just in a room and he was just, everything was happening by his purity. You know, just by his desire, everything was happening. That's why they went to, after Prabhupada left, they went to one of the industrialists in Bombay, and they said, like, can you give us some tips on how to manage the institution now Srila Prabhupada is gone? And he just began to laugh, and he said, your spiritual master was the best manager I've ever seen. Because he was just sitting in a room, he didn't even have a diary, and the whole thing was just going on. And then he looked at it and he said, because of spiritual purity. So purity is the force. And therefore, we follow the essence of it, doing some preaching, doing some groundwork before we preach, which will help us to affect in a deeper way. Therefore, you can listen to the lecture, Harinam, Sankirtan, Bomb Explosion, if you haven't listened to it already. Bhakti Tirtha Swami in Mayapur, who says we're going to drop a bomb. We're going to drop a bomb on the universe. And then he's talking about how in Mayapur everyone should be going on parikrama, hearing the lectures, chanting together to build up their energy so that they can affect the ethers of the universe, as he says. So So that's the point, that when you take some time to be filled in Krishna consciousness, you will just preach. It won't be like, okay, now I'm going to preach. Your whole life will be preaching. Because Vaisheshika says, just distribute the overflow. You're just overflowing so much, just distribute the overflow. Krishna consciousness. So yeah, the principle of it is important. Therefore Prabhupada said, like, okay, a morning program and hearing every day, so that nourishment is always happening on a day-to-day basis. Any other points? Okay, they say the clock, so we'll finish there.